Hello, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate you for sharing part of your midday with me. Lots to do on the show today. We're going to be checking in a lot about Apple and Facebook. Lots going on there, of course, and we'll be keeping you updated on all the numbers as we have them today. But before we get to all that, we have our good friend Dennis Rodkin in studio. You know that guy. He's a regular contributor to this program, real estate reporter over at Cranes. Always has lots of good information for us. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Amy.
Hello. So, you know, you write so many things, it's hard to keep up with you. There's so much to do.
Every time I churn them out.
I know. True. Every time I think I've seen your most recent thing, there's four more that have come up by the time I finish reading it. But, you know, one thing that's really kind of up right now is this idea that Amazon would move their other headquarters here. And you wrote a really, you've really been, of course, you know all things real estate here, but I think it's interesting to kind of consider what that would do to the housing market and kind of compare Chicago and Seattle. So talk us through that. What immediately jumps out at you about that prospect?
Well, the first thing that everybody says is, well, prices will go up. And that is true. But there's a whole lot more that could happen, because when you look at it, so they're talking about 50,000 jobs. And that doesn't mean that one day there are zero jobs and the next day there are 50,000. But it's a lot of households. One job, one household, 50,000 translates to about 120,000 people if by standard measures. So you're talking about adding over time an Evanston and an Oak Park to the Chicago area. So a lot of the things that people told me about are, we would have gentrification problems because a lot of our hot neighborhoods, which are very desirable, are full or nearly full. And when you add that many people, especially with this renaissance of city living, you know, these are not going to likely be people who want to buy subdivision houses way out beyond the cornfields, very likely to want to come to the city. And so we would see people being shifted around. We would see pressure on neighborhoods that either have only had a little bit of pressure now or maybe have had none. Some of what people were talking about is, we're seeing a lot of Western push, West Loop, Fulton Market, and to the west of that. And that might be where a lot of the gentrification would happen, or the potential gentrification would happen, because so much of the northern neighborhoods, it's already full. So would we see them pushing west, which has its positives and its negatives, and we could spend an hour on that. So that's one big one. Another would be that there's sort of the psychological effect of Amazon. If Amazon came to Chicago, it would have a psychological effect on our politicians, other parts of our economy, that sort of thing. But just for the housing market, which you and I have discussed and Steve and I have discussed, is very slow compared to other markets around the country, doing really well in the hot neighborhoods, but not as well outside those zones, would suddenly look like a really good investment. People would say, well, gee, Amazon, one real estate executive said to me, nobody thinks Amazon is stupid. Nobody would say, what people would say instead is, oh, well, if Amazon thinks that Chicago's a good bet, then I will be less reluctant to spend up on a bigger house, or I will be less reluctant to buy, transfer from renting, or I'll be less reluctant to put up another big apartment tower.
Right. That, I mean, it is interesting to consider all of those aspects of this. So when we look at how things unfolded in Seattle, it's interesting because Chicago and Seattle are both cities that have some very specific geographical kind of concerns and limitations. I think more so in Seattle because it's about water, not necessarily expansion.
And it's more hemmed in by water and mountains. Yeah. We're hemmed in really just by water on one side.
Sure. And so what other issues does that come up against when we think about Chicago specifically? You know, you mentioned west expansion. Would that be a case of southern expansion or further north?
Well, one of the things that is going on, regardless of what happens with Amazon, is that we are intensifying development in our hot neighborhoods. That's primarily north. South neighborhoods, it's happening. Near the south, it's happening, but it's just not happening at the pace of the West Loop and Bucktown and all those kinds of places. Would there be a shift? Certainly at some point. So if I come in as an Amazon software engineer, I'm going to be making a lot of money. So I can afford to bid up. Right. I can afford to go to Bucktown and say, I want that house regardless of cost. Other people, maybe not the high paid software engineer, maybe the person who sells that house and others, may start to look for bargain alternatives. I mean, again, we're talking about 50,000 households. So at some point there is a spillover effect south. But I think we would primarily expect, at least in the first years, north, and more importantly, west.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to consider that in Chicago when we already have so many very intense conversations about gentrification here.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So I think that would only heat that up, as you point out.
Oh, my gosh. I think it would be, we'd see it all around.
Oh.
We'd see so many battles over gentrification. Because look, I mean, just look at the last 2 years, the number of flashpoints on gentrification we've seen.
Well, if Twitter this morning was any indication, I think it would people were already infuriated. Nothing's even been announced. It's only a theory.
Exactly.
So I think if it was official, I think people would be very, very mad. There might be lots of outcry about that, to say the least.
But for everyone who's mad, there'd also be the seller of the luxury home who'd be really happy.
Who'd
be saying, oh, this has been sitting on the market for 2 years. Now somebody may be interested.
Right. I'm thinking about my very modest little home. I'm like, well, you know, I live in an all right spot. You know, there's
exactly.
That, right?
Let's see how it goes up.
Right. Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Lots of things to consider. We're talking with Dennis Rodkin, who is the real estate reporter over at Cranes and regular contributor to this program. We are chatting with Dennis Rodkin, real estate reporter at Cranes and regular contributor to this program. We've been talking a little bit about what it might look like if Amazon moved here. Well, we don't know unless that happens, but it seems like a lot of tense situations would get tenser.
Yeah,
certainly.
I think that's exactly it. I think it would. And so we're talking specifically residential real estate. But, I mean, you're also looking at, let's just say that Amazon goes to the West Loop.
Right.
You're looking at an enormous addition to the usership of public transit. You're looking at people demanding a demand for restaurants and everything else. Wherever they go, it's going to be hard to meet.
Oh, man, we think those CTA delays are bad now.
Yeah, right.
Cram another 50,000 people in there.
Right. And so the thing, you know, when we used to bring in corporate headquarters, they'd go to Lake Forest mm-hmm. or out by O'Hare, that kind of thing. And you'd expect, well, most of them are going to drive. But one, it's a new era. Two, it's Amazon.
It's
Amazon. You know, they're going to be software people. They're very likely to be, if not downtown, then on transit lines, right? So the suburbs with good transit service would probably do really well. The Oak Parks and places mm-hmm. like Forest Parks that are reached by transit would probably do quite well.
Yeah, well, it's going to be really interesting. Of course, we're going to keep turning to you to keep track of all that. Another story that you wrote recently that I thought was so interesting about this very very pricey condo in Lincoln Park, this $4.5 million condo that was purchased by, I'm going to let you tell it because it's like a very fascinating soap opera. I love the real estate stories that have the this person owned it and this person and this and this and this happened.
Returning ambassador to the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
Andrew Shapiro, a Chicago attorney who was tapped in mid-2015 by Barack Obama to be the ambassador to the Czech Republic. Left in January, as a lot of Obama appointees did, came back and spent $4.5 million on a condo in Lakeview. Wouldn't talk to me about it. He's back to his same law firm. And what's interesting, Amy, is, you know, I track the top of the market. I track a lot of things, but I actually have a spreadsheet where I watch the top of the market. And at the end of August, early September, we had three sales in the $4.5 million range and one in the $6 million range, which was a real flurry. We're still, it's an odd situation this year because our top is way below last year. Mm-hmm. Our top last year was over 11 million. Our top this year is 7 million.
I remember that, yeah.
But the number, just this, there was like this burst of sales in the over 4 million category, including this one to the former ambassador. There's one in the Palmolive building that went for over 6. And there is one at the Park Tower overlooking the water tower, that 800 North Michigan that went for 4.5. It's kind of a surprise to see all this happening all of a sudden.
Yeah, what do you make of that?
You know, it may just be coincidence. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may just be that these four buyers all happened to close their deals at the same time. But it could be a sign that some of that slack in the luxury market is finally sort of healing, that we might see some big stuff happen this fall. I wouldn't hold my breath because there are a lot of factors that are slowing down our luxury market, which would speed up if we got Amazon. You know, at the moment, there's just so much luxury property sitting. It was nice to see those four sell, but we'll see what happens in the next month, 2 months.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's so interesting about your area of focus is it's such a kind of barometer for so many other things happening socially and politically. I mean, it's really interesting how that's so reflected in our behavior around real estate.
Well, you know, one of the things I always say is that when you're covering real estate, you're covering psychology. In Chicago, you're also covering architecture. you're really covering personal finance. And one of the things that we hear a lot, I hear often from the high-end agents, is financially very sophisticated people, people who can buy a $4, $5, $6 million house, are looking around Illinois right now and they're a little worried. Even though their tax bill may be small relative to yours because they have such big incomes, they're thinking, well, why should I be putting so much of my tax money into a hole that just seems to get deeper? How much deeper is it going to get over the next few years? We all know taxes are going to go up in Chicago, Cook County, and Illinois. Where will it go? How certain can I be? And the agents at that level of the market keep telling me that a lot of these people, even though in dollar terms it doesn't matter much to them, it matters a lot to them.
Hmm. See, that's the psychological part.
Yeah, exactly.
All the many hats that you wear to cover your beat and bring us such good information. Dennis Rodkin, real estate reporter at Cranes, thanks so much for being with
us.
Thanks,
Amy.
We're joined now by features editor at CNET, Rochelle Garner. And Rochelle, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So, you know, there's so many things to talk about, and there's always so much great information on CNET. But one story I really think is so interesting. For a while, since I'd say the campaign trail, we've been having some discussions about how our news feeds are quite curated and perhaps swayed opinion of voters and things like that. But in the last week, that conversation has intensified with some new information about how perhaps Russia has reportedly used Facebook at the time to organize in the U.S., and which is such a fascinating story and so reflective of modern considerations in our political world. So talk us through that a bit, if you would.
It is interesting, isn't it? And to my mind, at least, it shows not only have we known for a while that Facebook, primarily because of its size and its reach, has enormous influence on what people think and their opinions. But now that we're seeing the campaigns that the Russians waged, it's also been able to influence human behavior, actually getting people to assemble for made-up rallies against certain groups because of what those groups believe in or what they represent. So it's very, very interesting. Obviously, this has enormous ramifications, both politically and technology. And it's also obvious from the things that Facebook has been saying that they're aware of it. They're trying to deal with it. But this is huge, and it's not going to be something that is going to be easily or quickly dealt with. Or there's some question about whether it can actually be completely dealt with.
Right, right. I was going to say, it seems like it's almost too far-reaching to even know where to begin tackling that. But what I think is very interesting, well, there are many interesting aspects of this, but it sticks out to me right away that almost immediately when that accusation kind of first started surfacing, Mark Zuckerberg, a Facebook CEO, was right away, absolutely ridiculous, absolutely not, that's absurd. I mean, was so adamant about that being so ridiculous and so far-fetched. And now fast forward all these months and here we are.
Yes, it's once again proved that denial ain't just a river in Egypt. It definitely is something. It didn't take long for his denials to actually say, well, maybe there is some truth to it. And the more obviously they delved into it, they realized that, in fact, there was indeed a there. We're all now very keenly aware of it. To the point that I find interesting is that now Facebook doesn't even call it fake news because that's taken on a phrase of its own, but now they call it false news, which I'm kind of partial to myself because we're saying it's made up. Yeah. It isn't real. Whether you disagree with her or not, it's false.
Right, right. And as you said, it's almost impossible to even begin to know where to begin correcting this or assessing the reach of the damage, really.
And obviously it's really hard to know just now, but I've been reading a lot of just analyst thoughts and comments on it. And the consensus that I'm kind of leaning toward myself is that this shows just how incredibly well-funded, well-organized the entire campaign from an outside country has been in influencing U.S. opinion, U.S. elections, and not just the U.S., by the way. This is also a big issue in Europe going on right now. But it shows that the new wars that are being waged are being done with cyber activity, whether that happens to be espionage, hacking, or just influencing campaigns. I think the upshot of living in a world that is constantly connected.
Right, right. And it's so interesting because I feel like even just maybe 5 years ago, if you'd said the word tweet, people would still giggle because that was such a like a funny word associated with birds. And now, you know, we look at Twitter and Facebook as you know, they have to be taken seriously, as does the ramifications of and responsibility of using them and gathering information from them. So what are the next steps we could expect to see as this story continues to unfold?
Well, that's a very interesting question in its own right, because Twitter, for example, which I would suggest has an outsized influence given the actual reach that it has, recognizes it has to do things, but it has a legacy of allowing free speech, anonymous postings, and that has basically run away. And so we see now and again they're trying to do things. They announce efforts that they've put into operation, but it always seems to be too little, too late. Facebook has much more money to work with than Twitter does, has broader reach than Twitter does. But again, it's a question of is it too big to even adjust? You've always heard the phrase too big to fail. Is it too big to rein in? It might be.
But speaking of Facebook, there's also another story on CNET.com that is really interesting about an adjustment to, you know, as they've gone more into marketplace, as Facebook ads and revenue have become more and more of a significant source of revenue for Facebook, they've really shifted a little bit and made some kind of hard lines in the sand about their standards and guidelines for what can and cannot be used on Facebook, which I think feeds into this a little bit because some of it feeds into this kind of clickbait, sensationalist kind of stuff, but also some hate speech. And I think that's where it gets interesting with Twitter, because there's been so many cases where Twitter hasn't banned something that a lot of people are considering hate speech in the name of free speech.
You're absolutely right. And that is definitely one of the things they're dealing with. Just as an aside with that, you may remember about a year ago, there was a lot of discussion that companies might be interested in buying Twitter. My thought has always been, that's a hell of a lot of liability for a company to want to take on. And it's because exactly of the point that you've made, that they allow hate speech, they allow abusive behavior. It's very, very difficult for them to curtail it now. They've let it get out of hand. The genie is out of that bottle, and they cannot bring it back in.
Yeah. And so kind of talk us through a little bit about what Facebook has updated and kind of where they're falling on these new guidelines.
Well, you're asking questions that actually I haven't actually looked at in the past week because my attention's been honestly turned on a little thing called Apple and iPhone.
Yes.
So you'll have to bear with me on that one. But generally, you see them constantly making announcements and sort of moving the stake in the sand just a little bit further and further about recognizing what's false, recognizing behavior that is being manipulative, and stopping and not allowing those kinds of sites or pages to advertise. So everything that they're doing in that is, again, a few steps forward, a few steps forward. And it's all toward that end.
Right, right. And unfortunately, we're sitting here running out of time, but I am fascinated by Apple kind of had two punches for us this week. There was both the iPhone announcement, but also this building, which is so fascinating, this facility. And it seems like almost the building story is a bigger story than the phone story.
Well, the building is fascinating because, as you probably are aware of, this was Steve Jobs' dying wish. In fact, his last public appearance before he died was in front of the local town center to actually get them to approve building the spaceship. And it's all part of his long-held design philosophy and what's called casual collision, the idea that you can collaborate better when you just run into somebody on your way to someplace else, that people who maybe should be talking, but don't normally get a chance to run into each other, stop, have a conversation, and from that, serendipity, collaboration, and projects happen. This thing is a giant circle. It is huge. And the idea there is that you actually have to run into somebody on the way to somebody else. You can't avoid it. He did the same thing when he redesigned the campus for Pixar, after he invested in that, creating essentially a giant atrium that people had to walk through. So this is really part of This is the last vestige of what you can see of Steve Jobs' design philosophy. And as you know, he cared deeply about design. This is a statement about him.
Right, right. It truly is. And it's a fascinating, there's pictures up on CNET, that, you know, renderings, that is just fascinating. It does look like a giant spaceship.
Actually,
really,
and if I may say, those aren't renderings. Those are photographs. It is quite extraordinary, is it not?
It really, really is. I think it sounds great for business. Maybe a nightmare for introvert coworkers, but certainly good for business. Everyone just got a lot more social.
What, an introvert tech worker? I never heard of such a thing.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, Rochelle Garner, features editor at CNET, thanks so much for being with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Up next on the show, we are talking with Elise Glink. You know her. We talk to her all the time on this show. She's the CEO of BestMoneyMoves.com. Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm fine. Amy, how are you?
Great. Well, it seems like you have a ton going on over there at BestMoneyMoves.com. Tell us what you are up to.
Well, we are in the hunt for a big win right now. We came out of our beta group in January, and now we've just been nominated as a semifinalist for HR Tech's Awesome New HR Technology of the Year Award. And you can vote for us on our website, bestmoneymoves.com.
Well, that's pretty cool. So if you get, let's not say if, let's say when you receive that award, what happens next? What does that mean for you and for bestmoneymoves.com?
Well, what happens is that the four finalists will go up on the main stage in Las Vegas on October 10th. I'm hoping to be one of the four. We'll find out in the next 2 days. So if that happens, there will be 6,000 people in the audience, all of who want to know about financial wellness and how they can bring that to their employees.
Well, that sounds pretty good. And so, again, let's not say if, let's say when you take this take this victory. I'm all about positive thinking here. And so what would you hope to do with that expanded platform and more access to more people upon that win?
You know, it's funny, Amy. Everybody who knows me in Chicago knows that throughout my 25-year-plus career as a financial journalist, I was really all about helping people make smarter decisions with their money. And what I've done with Best Money Moves is actually take that concept and add technology behind it to really leverage what you can do, the personalized information you give to everybody so that they can solve their own financial problems and dial down their own financial stress. I think we can all agree that everybody's just a little hot under the collar right now. And if you can take at least money off the table, that'll be helpful.
Indeed. And so what are you most excited about right now in that space where money and technology intersect? Because I know you keep such close tabs on both of those topics. So what should we be looking at? What new apps or services are kind of on your radar that have you excited?
Well, I think that it's, you know, when you're looking at an app, everybody thinks, you know, oh, an app, you go to the app store. But a new trend or a continuing trend that we're seeing is the power of just a mobile website. It works with all kinds of platforms, whether you have a Samsung or you've got an Apple or you've got an Android of some other sort. So developers are looking to create the widest possible platforms with the fewest amount of limitations. And frankly, being, you know, one app in a sea of, you know, hundreds of thousands at the Apple App Store, kind of hard to break through. And so they're looking for other unique ways to do that. Social media is really helping, and it's driving a lot of the decisions that are being made. But you can expect to see more and more things with your money, legal advice. There's a new technology company that's just starting up that's looking to replace all the lawyers in the world, or at least make it a little cheaper to use one.
Interesting. See, what will we think of next? I've been keeping an eye on some of the new services that aren't necessarily, as you said, like aren't a standalone app, but that are, you know, put through Facebook's API, run through Facebook Messenger, things like Trim, which I think is a really interesting money saving one that I've been reading more and more about. That just sounds like an interesting way to kind of be on top of your money. It seems like there's a couple of those. I keep seeing ads for them in some of my feeds too. So that seems like kind of a hot spot for focus right now too.
I think that when you look at money apps, you are seeing different kinds of tools that scrape your change. So if you go to Starbucks, they'll up you a few cents to the next dollar level, and then they'll move that money right into a savings account. I think the questions you always have to ask yourself when it comes to your money is, how is that other company profiting? Because what is hidden behind that is either a desire to sell you things or get money for assets under management, because that's how companies really make money. And so when you work in the sort of money world, I find it a little bit hard to swallow that companies are trying to, quote unquote, help you save money, but what they're really doing is enriching themselves. And I think that you should be very careful before you start giving your personal information to companies like that.
Indeed, indeed. Well, how can people vote for you so that Best Money Moves takes all the victory it's got coming to it, Elise?
Well, it's very easy. Just go to bestmoneymoves.com, which is our marketing website. And right there on the homepage, you'll see a blue bar, and it just tells you that we've been nominated, and you vote here, and you click there, and it'll take you right to the page where you can see all of the different companies that are up. There's actually another one from, I think, 1871, another Chicago-based company, and I'm not up against them directly, so I hope they do fabulously well as well. But you can just vote there, and you can see all the information about the different companies that are there, and you can place your votes.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Amy. See you soon.